Welcome to the Round 11 Supercoach Coach Podcast. My name is Marcus and I'm joined again this week by FB Donkey.
G'day, mate. How you going?
Yeah, I'm going well. Not as good as you, probably, after a big Supercoach weekend for yourself. But we're also joined by a special guest, Dunny's joining back with us this week. So it's good to have Dunny on.
G'day, guys. Thanks for having me back.
The curse will probably come up when we review our scores, but you've been doing reasonably well sort of since you've last been on, Dunny, except for just this most recent week. So I'm looking forward.
We'll talk about that in a minute.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing at least about the positive last 3 weeks and also a bit later on, Dunny, getting your view on these buy-free port players, which I think a lot of us are licking our lips over this week. For this week's show, we're actually going to focus on three main topics. A recap of buy trade strategy, which we've talked to the last couple of weeks in the lead up to the buys. And then we're going to look at the trade out targets because that's a pretty big deal this week. Most people don't have more than three trade out candidates. So it's about prioritizing what's important to move on first. And then, of course, rookie options and downgrade options like Scooter Selwood. So that's going to be the focus for this week's episode. Before we get into all that, as we do each week, we'll start off with a personal update. Mark, as I mentioned at the start of the show, I'm pretty sure you smashed us all, so why don't you kick us off with your big score, mate?
23-22 this week, which was nice. I think mainly just avoided some of the poorer scorers, and my midfield went off. Great to have Beams and Treloar back doing well the last 2 weeks. I was a bit frustrated with Toby Green until three-quarter time, but he got it done, which was nice.
Boom, Green!
Yeah, I basically halved my rankings, so sitting at about 2,800 heading into the buys. So I think that's actually not a bad spot. I know it's about 170 points behind you, Marcus, but some chance of hitting the top 1,000 by the end of the buys, I guess.
I'd tell you a pretty good chance, mate. Well, at least I'd hope so, because like you said, I'm 170 in front, but not quite in the top 1,000 myself. So I'm definitely hoping to make my way in there. It's the three-round period that is really quite exciting in Supercoach, especially because you don't really know how it's going to shake out until all three rounds are played, because, of course, everyone has different their team stacked differently for the buys. Dunny, how'd you go over the weekend?
Yeah, so as we mentioned, when Mark messaged me last week and said, "Hey, are you free for the podcast next Tuesday?" I said, "Oh no, here we go again." Previous time when I was on, I had one of my worst weeks ever. The following 3 weeks, I've actually beaten you guys every single week, and I thought, right, come on, surely I'll be all right, surely I'll be all right. But no, this week, no. 2077 this week, I had a shocker. Jake Lloyd in my back line, so his force certainly helped. Didn't help me. You know, there's 110 odd points that I've missed out on. And with Rocky and Sandy in my team as well, meant that I had to put Myers and Parsons on the field, who both only got in the 40s. So not the best of weeks, but that's okay. We live to fight another day.
The bye period offers plenty of opportunity for all of us to move up, Dunny. So I'm hoping we don't jinx you any further with this podcast. The podcast trend, and you can move up over the buys. For myself, I scored 22.53, so that pushed me up still. I'm currently sitting 11.65. It was my overall rank, and I'm pretty happy with that. I got Stewart in over Newman as my loophole in the back line, which is nice. And I got Barrett and Greenwood on field in the 70s, which is not too bad, covering Rockcliffe as well. Barrett 87 last week and 77 this week. I'm actually really, really happy about scoring on field. I bought in Ryder, who was looking like really god awful. I think he was on 30 at three-quarter time, ended up on 69.
If you're watching the game, he didn't look awful at all. He looked awesome. His scoring was just awful.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I think he was fine in the ruck contest, but like it was not sighted everywhere else. And I know that's what you kind of have to expect.
Get used to that.
I know. I totally know that, Mark. I totally know that. And I know the downside of Ryder. Like there was no way he was keeping up the average I paid for him. But I want somebody buy free. I like the flexibility of Ryder, Nankervis. And so I pulled the trigger. I also didn't trade out Sandy. I think like the both of you, which is a bit concerning because this week it sounds like he might miss another. So we will talk about that later on in the show. And Parsons is probably the only other sort of disappointment. I've got Black sort of still missing games, and with Sandy out, so Parsons has been coming on the last couple of weeks, and yeah, he's not scoring well at all. So looking forward to going to 18 players on field because I'll have more than 18 players, and hopefully Parsons is not on field for myself this week. All right, let's go to a quick group update. Leader of our group for the week was Lewis's team. He scored 24-31, which is an absolutely massive score for the round, which pushed him into the top 10,000. So congratulations to Lewis. And we should also recognize the leader of our Supercoach Coach group at the moment is coming second, which is fantastic. Kyle's Tyrannosaurus Tex. He's been right up there this whole season, so it's good to see him there. And also, let's give a few more shout-outs because we've got plenty of players in the top 20 at the moment. Got James's MTM All-Stars, who we've sort of given props to earlier in the year. He's currently ranked at 11th, and rounding up the top 20 is Dr. Bones, who's a longtime veteran of the Supercoach Coach Forums, with his Set and Forget team currently sitting at 16th. And then still
awesome on job from Bones.
And I think we've got another 5 in the top 100 in our group. So there's definitely a lot
we
of people.
We should also give props to Mucus Bontem Smelly, who's one of the Patreons and is sitting 18th at the moment.
That's awesome. Good to hear. On to group update and the Supercoach Coach Patreons again, sort of representing there. They're up to the 4th ranked league overall. We still retain 8 of the top 9. Including another 5 in the top 17. So, still happy days. All right, let's get onto the guts now of the show. Before we go into buy, trade strategy, trade outs and rookies, do want to quickly talk about a player who got injured on the weekend, because as we know, it really hurts to deal with donuts over this buy period. You basically want to have as many people playing as possible, and holding a premium donut is really something that's palatable, and it's probably one of the few times, Mark, that we recommend aggressively trading out short-term injuries for premiums. So Seeker 11 or at Seeker Supercoach is asking whether or not to trade out JJK. He's out for 3 with a calf injury, and that's obviously a big concern. So, you know, as I've already referenced, I think it's a fair no-brainer for me, and I'd definitely be looking at trading out JJ, even though he's averaging easily in that top 6 at the moment.
The only way I'd keep a premium probably would be if they were like a real standout, like 5 or 10 points ahead for that spot, like a Doherty maybe. But JJK, there's other players that can fill that role.
Yep, definitely agree. So we'll move off JJK now, and hopefully you can find some options. We'll talk about general trade strategy next. So hopefully that informs whether you should sideways him or trade down or trade to a mid-price or whatever. So by trade strategy, we have covered this over the past couple of weeks and covered our general position, but we still get questions about it fairly often, and it's obviously fairly relevant to the next 3 weeks. So we'll keep recapping it, but at the same time, we're not going to spend a huge amount of time on it. And if you want, I think the last few eps, you'll be able to go back and listen to that particular segment. And nowadays, I've actually in the show notes included timestamps for particular segments of the show. So you can just go look for the buy trade strategy, click on the time, and away you go if you need a refresher. Nonetheless, this week, the first question that we're going to tackle is from Daniel Marcer 8 on Twitter. Is it worth upgrading this week, or do you build the bank this week to go bang once all the players have had their buys? So, yeah, I think that's basically spot on. This week is the week that you tend not to want to upgrade. I think this year is a little bit different because you have the opportunity to bring in players who are buy free because of Port and Suns already have had their buy. But nonetheless, the idea is to next week make a majority of your upgrades, because at the end of the day, there's, you know, 6 teams rolling off their bye next week, and this week there's only 2 teams that you can choose from that are bye free. So as a core principle, you should be in all likelihood trying to build bank to be able to upgrade aggressively next week. But having said that, if there was a Port or Gold Coast player that suits your upgrades this week, then I have no issue with trading in a bye free player to help alleviate that and continue your upgrade cycle into another week when, you know, most other people would be stopping this week.
Look, I agree with pretty much everything you've said there, Marcus. Really, you know, I try and do a bit of downgrading this week if I can to get some bank involved so that I can go bang in the next week. But the only other time that you might want to look at upgrading this week potentially is if you do have, you know, if you've got 19 or 20 players potentially on field this week and you're pretty good for round 11, if you've got a yeah, say a round 11 buy rookie that you wanted to upgrade to a round 11 buy player, you could do that. Like I said, you'd want to make sure you're very comfortable in getting 18 good players on the field or 18 players on the field for this week before you look at that sort of strategy. And the only other players you may look at would be a round 12 player, only because there's only four teams and you should be able to field at least 21, 22 players next week anyway. But look, I personally, I'll be looking to do some downgrading, get myself plenty of cash to basically go on a shopping spree next week.
I think that is an interesting point you bring up, Donnie, in the fact that this year we only have four teams missing in the round 12 bye, and therefore potentially you have more of a reason to continue your upgrade cycle by filling in more of the gaps in round 12. I mean, if you only have one player missing in the midfield in round 12, you are probably best off just trading in a Joel Selwood or a Scooter Selwood, yeah, to help fill in those bye slots, because you're less likely to want to address it next week when you're going to want to bring in a round 11 bye player, whereas this week when you're still stuck with options, the round 12 option is actually not too bad, Donnie. I like that.
Yeah, and I totally agree with that. And I think that any player that you bring in, unless they're from Port or the Suns, they're going to miss one of the next three games.
Yeah.
So I'm not against upgrading this week at all. And if you're going to be engaged in upgrading this week, it should be about establishing a good balance across the next 3 weeks. And I think that what a lot of teams are going to face is a really difficult week 13 and a pretty easy round 12. So upgrading to those round 12 premiums in particular, I think that there is some incentive to do that this week. And even the rookies that are coming through, a lot of them are round 13 rookies. So I do think that it's really important to prepare as early as possible for that round.
And again, this buy trade strategy is slightly more relevant to the overall strategy where you're trying to maximize your points for a 23-round season. If you are just a pure league player, understandably, your approach might be a little bit different. Even round 13, you're looking awful, but so is your opponent. Well, maybe you're not too fussed about that and you're more concerned about how your team looks the final four rounds of the season and how your trades sort of remain over the course of the second half of the season, rather than sort of focusing too hard on trying to achieve a good equilibrium. But if you're going for the overall strategy, which is tends to be what we talk to on this show, then absolutely what we've said so far is 150% applies. Final question for buy trade strategy. This one's from Elliot S or at Escargo23 on Twitter. Should we cull cash cows early if it means that we can get more premiums that we want after their buy? So a couple of examples here are Stewart and Barrett, who really were averaging in about the 50s, but then in the last 2 weeks have managed, I think, 91 last week from Stewart, and like I mentioned for Barrett, 77, 87. So their break-evens are relatively low, and it kind of feels like we've waited all this time, but the payoff is going to happen through the buys or after the buys. In that sort of situation, how do you balance buy-trade strategy with optimizing cash generation? Mark, do you have any particular opinions about that?
It's really tricky. Like, I've got Barrett, who I'll probably trade this week or next week. And if I'm going to trade him next week anyway, it may as well just be this week because he's not playing and I can keep maybe someone that is playing on the field. I don't think you can hold out for every player to make every cent that they're going to in your upgrade process. Sometimes you just need to jump. That means that you cash someone out a bit earlier than you would like. I also think maybe Barrett's scores are a bit inflated with Rocky out of the team potentially. So you wouldn't want to do it too many times, but every so often you can go a bit early on one of these rookies.
Yeah, I agree with that, Mark. I think you've got to balance that really closely because sometimes you can hold on to these rookies too long. I mean, if they are 100% getting a game throughout the bye period, you might be tempted to keep them for an extra week than what you normally would have just to get that coverage in the bye period because you don't want to be downgrading to someone who may miss the next week. So, someone like a Barrett or a Stewart seems to be fairly well set in those sides, so certainly wouldn't be against anyone holding them for an extra week. But if you can use that to get to a premium player quicker, then that's what the name of the game is, getting your premium side as quick as you can.
Absolutely. You don't want to be squeezing your cash generation too long and sacrificing your point scoring because at the end of the day, maximizing cash generation is so that you can maximize point scoring in the second half of the season. So you don't want to be making the trade-offs poorly in the direction of cash generation and sacrificing your point scoring that way. So
Can I just pick up on that point, Marcus, and just give one more piece of buy advice, and that is it's going to be easy to focus all your intentions on the next 3 weeks and try and get as high a ranking rise over the next 3 weeks as possible, but end up with a less than optimal team that you then have to have for the next 9 weeks. So I think it's really easy to have a short-term focus in this game. So I just caution people to maybe try and have that little bit of a longer-term focus where you think about what your bench is going to look like and which premiums you really want on each line.
And this does take us quite nicely to trade out targets. This first question here is from Andrew Black. Question really refers to some of the non-playing players that we're kind of dealing with, or poor scoring players. Is it time to get rid of Balak and Parsons? Is there any hope of Eddie and Hibbard coming back? There's a few other rookies that you could chuck in there in terms of struggling to get games or struggling to score at the moment. Aaron Black, for example, is another. Kind of want to lump most of these guys together. When you're dealing with the buys, like we talked about with JJK, you can't really afford to have a bloke sitting on your bench for all three rounds without sort of seriously impacting your top line scoring. Having said that, though, is it a little bit more palatable to hold potentially one of these rookies, or you're on a mission to sort of clear as many of these out of your team as feasibly possible?
Yeah, when you're looking at guys like Balak, Eddie and Hibbard, you may want to move them on. Yeah, if they're not going to be playing throughout the buys, well, you know, that's not really going to help you at all. Parsons, I'll be keeping him for this week, but he's on bloody thin ice. I think, you know, I'll keep him this week for cover. I'll try and get rid of him in his round 12 bye. Just on Brett Eddy, I mean, he's been smashing it in the SANFL. Well, smashing it, kicking, you know, bags of 3 and 4 goals a week. I think he had something like, I'm not sure on Supercoach points, but he had over 100 fantasy points on the weekend for the Port Magpies. But I just don't see where that spot's going to come for him in the power side. And I think Monfries is more likely to come back in before he does. But yeah, with guys like Balak, we just have no idea when he's coming back. And Hibbert doesn't look like getting a game at the moment either. So I wouldn't have any issues moving them on, particularly throughout the bye period.
Hibbert's actually one of my most valuable players because I can swing him and Adams between the mids and the backs. And I've used that link like almost every week. I find that really, really valuable.
Yeah.
But I have Hibbert and I have Stranadeka, and that would be enough. I think that two non-playing rookies is close to as much as you could take. If you're looking, if you've still got someone like Pickett in your team, I think you've just got to bite the bullet and you don't get any money for it. But before we run out of rookies to trade him to, I think you've just got to use one of your trades to get him out. And now is the time to do it, because now is the time where rookies are actually going to be playing on your field. So my advice is, if you've got three or more, then strongly consider Cullen.
Yeah, I've got Hibbard, Cameron and Black, who are my non-playing players at the moment. I think Cameron or Stronadika are the two blokes that are the most palatable to be able to hold on your ruck bench, especially this year because we have the Nankervis cover. You can quite easily hide them without feeling the impact. But I really feel like elsewhere on field, like Hibbard and Black, if they're both not getting games, they're almost certainly gone from my team this coming week. So it's a sideways, it's awful, it's two trades that make me 100K. But, I mean, this is why we have three trades prior to the bye commencing, and at least I'm not sacrificing upgrades because I'm going to have a lot more options next week than I do this week. And if I cop the bullet this week, then the next 2 weeks I don't have to think about it. Whereas if I defer it 1 week, next week is going to be a pain again. The week after is going to be a pain again. You can be dealt with injuries that are unexpected. I know I've planned for having 18 playing players on field before, including, you know, copying one of these non-playing rookies, and then the next week you get an injury and you're like, hurry out, I just wish I traded him out earlier on. But at the same time, you don't want to make compromised rookie decisions, because if you're forcing these rookies out but they're no good rookie trade-in options, then, you know, if they get dropped next week or if they're scoring 20s, then to a degree, didn't really matter that you traded in cover because it accumulated for 50 points or whatever. So there's no definitive answer, but I'd say I would try my hardest to move them on as long as they were suitable targets and it didn't affect your overall trade strategy too much. So you wouldn't want to trade Pickett, Hibbert and Stranadeka all out in 1 week, because you'd make, what, 10K out of three trades, and next week you're not going to be able to do squat. So there's a bit of balancing, there's a bit of finesse, and it's really hard to give concrete answers. But as we do with the Supercoach Coach podcast each week, is just to give you these overall principles, and hopefully that's enough to apply it to your individual team. All right, we'll move on now onto rookies. So the first bloke we want to talk about is Matt Schoenberg, who, Mark, you've sort of flagged for a little while now. Matt Grimston is asking whether or not we would consider going a week early on him. He will play the next two rounds, and he's already played his first, which means that he will have one price rise prior to his first buy, which is unfortunate because that means that anyone struggling with round 13 buys already but does need a good, reliable downgrade target in the back line might have to commit to being overexposed in that situation. Considering his pedigree, there seems to be a fairly decent case for going early. I, for one, am certainly looking at that this week, especially because if you're looking at sort of upgrading heavily next week, then your downgrade options next week will be more limited because you're going to be spending your money that you're presumably generating this week.
Yeah, I think that Schoenberg is probably one player that I would be okay to go on early, especially since they held him back for a couple of weeks in the VFL. The other tricky thing going ahead is I think most teams are going to want to bring in Luke Ryan from Fremantle. I'm really expecting him to be named this week. He's another round 13 by-player defender that would be really good to have in your team in the back half of the year.
Yeah, I think the thing that probably worries me a little bit about Schoenberg is just his price at $164,000. He's not a bargain basement rookie.
Good call.
So you are going to give up a few dollars there if you are looking to bring him in. So Luke Ryan's $117,000 rookie. So if I was looking to bring in a defender who's got a round 13 buy, I'd probably like to bring in Ryan at that point.
At a high level, I definitely agree with both of you on Schoenberg. There's reasons to go early, but there's also potentially reasons to hold off an additional week and price tag being the predominant reason for that. The next question is from Robert Lofty Spencer, and his question on Facebook is more related to the players that are actually on the bubble this week. So let's talk about Greenwood. Let's talk about Bolton as trade down targets. And then I'm going to chuck in a couple more here that he didn't bring up, but I think might be worth considering in the same bucket. The first is Perryman. The unfortunate part is he's priced $153,000 and he's averaging 40 at the moment, but back mid available on the bubble as well. And then you've got Shear. Now, Shear's already gone up one price movement and his average is really quite poor, averaging 40, but he is buy free, which is definitely a consideration. So I think maybe worthwhile bringing into the mix as well. So of those four blokes, I think two of us already have Greenwood, Mark and myself. Dunny, do you have Greenwood yet?
Yeah, I had to go early on Greenwood last week just to get six players in my forward line.
Yeah, so it sounds like all three of us are keen on Greenwood then.
Yep, so we would all agree that you just lock him in. Based on what we've seen,
he's
a must-have rookie.
And I think the thing for me that made it an even better decision was the fact that he held his spot when Jenkins came back in.
Yeah,
I was a little worried about that, but it didn't seem to be a problem.
And Hampton being out might actually help him as well.
Yeah, yes. I agree with that. So Bolton, Perryman and Shear. Now, these three are the flip side of Greenwood, who are, instead of assuring like Greenwood, a little bit more circumspect. Bolton, we've discussed his job security issues last week. Perryman's price tag is a big concern, and the fact that GWS are so injury afflicted at the moment is sort of a big reason why he's in at the moment. Shear's the one that you'd think, in terms of opportunity, should get the most opportunity, but his scoring is absolutely awful at the moment. And considering he's gone up a price rise, it's also seems compromised. So it's three compromised options here. Any that particularly stand out to either of you?
I quite liked Bolton's game against the Bombers on the weekend. He chased down, I think it was Zaharakis on the wing, and I think the coach would have absolutely loved that. His pressure and his ability to sort of weave in and out of traffic was pretty impressive. So look, I think that there's a good chance he'll play a lot of games for Richmond in the second half of the year. He's round 12 by player. I'm a little bit worried about what happens when Butler comes back. Is he going to get over the groin injury and does he replace Joe Bolton? Because they do play a reasonably similar role, but he would definitely be the best out of those three.
Yeah, I'm actually looking at potentially bringing in Bolton this week as a bit of a downgrade. And that round 12 buy really makes him a lot more attractive. Shear, I'd have to say a big no to, I think. He has had a price rise, but he's still only $138,000, which sort of says a lot about him. He's at a 45, a 27, and a 44. Yeah, that doesn't really scream must-have to me. I think Perryman's got pretty good job security, just given all those injuries at GWS, but yeah, I probably much prefer Bolton in my side.
You just got to be careful about who your forward bench ends up being. You want to be careful that you don't end up with Greenwood, Bolton and Parsons all in your forward line. I was thinking that I kind of don't really want Bolton and Parsons to be my forward bench either, because I would be praying I did not get a forward injury.
I'm bringing Bolton into the midfield bench, being a mid-forward. And I think, yeah, Parsons will hopefully be going for me. But yeah, I think if you bring in Greenwood, he's someone that you could probably leave there and be confident as having him as your bench player in the forward lines. He seems to be scoring fairly well.
I think Perryman's the only one out of the three I'd definitely rule out, just because buy-wise, like round 13 is awful, considering we're talking about Scharenberg and Luke Ryan potentially being candidates that you might want to trade in round 13 anyway. Bolton's flexibility as a mid-forwarder I really do like as well. I like the fact that you can hide him in your midfield bench in round 12. I don't know how many people have three round 12 midfielders at the moment, and he might be a decent sort of filler there. Be a bit concerned that post-buy you might not get back in, but if he was named this week, I think that'd give me enough confidence to go, well, might as well lock him in and hope round 13 he does play. Final downgrade option that we're going to talk about for the week is Scooter Selwood. Yeah, we got the most questions about him for the week and maybe even should have started the show on him, but nonetheless, I think the flow of the show works in this way. Ryan or at when DTSC11 is asking about our thoughts on Selwood and whether or not he's a viable stepping stone, and more importantly, considering a lot of us are pretty close to finishing our teams, like, is he a good emergency? Is he a good potential sort of stepping stone to a future M9, D7 sort of pivot cover premium? Where does Selwood sit? Because even as a stepping stone, he's not going to have increased in price enough to cash in on by the time you're hopefully looking to already finish your team.
I'm not sure what the answer to that question is, but I'm still going to pick him up.
I think... we're all like that a bit, mate.
Yeah, like, I'm happy for him to evolve into whatever he needs to be. For me, he's likely, like, I have still two midfield up spots to upgrade, and that's going to cost a lot of money. So for me, he's sort of like hedging my bets in that eighth spot, and I'd rather have someone that might average 90 plus 100 to sit there rather than a rookie for a while. So yeah, I'm happy to sort of figure it out as it goes with him.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that, Mark. I'm looking to pick him up this week. I mean, at that price tag of 281, it's pretty hard to go past, to be honest. And if he ends up being your M8, well, it's probably not the worst thing in the world, because we know he's going to get games. The only concern that I have about him is that whether he picks up a tagging role here and there. But even then, in his days at West Coast when he was doing some tagging, he still managed to rack up some points exactly. When he did that. So I'd be happy picking him up.
Scooter was in my team, and I'm going to admit bias here as a short supporter, but Scooter was in my team most of the preseason. He only left 2 weeks out when it did look fairly obvious that he wasn't going to get back, and if he did, it wasn't going to be in any sort of state where he'd be scoring instantly. They definitely made him bide his time in the VFL. They made him build up his fitness. We saw him come a little bit early into the team last year, toward the end of the season off an injury, and sort of came back in and out. I hope that they've taken a more conservative approach, but now that he's in, the idea is that he's fit and firing and ready to go, as opposed to last year where, you know, they got him in early but then they still had to manage him and that sort of thing. So big raps on Scooter. I think that he's made a big difference to our contested ball over the last few weeks, to our tackle pressure over the last few weeks. Job security is a moot point almost. It's just all about scoring potential. Is he worth that 280k price tag? And I think considering the downgrade options that we face this year, you just got to take the punt that he is.
Do we need to caution people that there are some risks here, or we're all just happy to say this guy's a must-have, you've got to get him, it's a year of value, the price is irresistible?
I think I'd definitely caution the risk, just because, like I said, I don't think that the timing of when you'd like to bring in a mid-pricer is ideal, but I just think that we're so strapped for options that you're almost priced into him. So if you wanted to do three downgrades this week, I think you'd be most comfortable with Scharenberg, Greenwood, and Selwood. A lot of people have gone early on Greenwood. Scharenberg, you're going early on. He's round 13 and he's 160k, and Scooter's 280k, but at least he plays for a round 12 by team. So I think we're just in such a compromised position. Like, the next best option is Shai Bolton, who last week we were poo-pooing, and this week with less options, we're like, maybe. Like, so I just think because of that, like, yes, we have to look to him, and yes, we probably have glossed over his potential risks a little bit. So I think it's fair that you've brought it up, Mark, but to a degree, like, the risks sort of don't outweigh the pros in this particular season is my two cents.
I agree with that, Marcus. I think, yeah, anytime you're bringing in a mid-pricer is a huge risk. I mean, I think we all go against that at the start of the season. We say, hey, don't bring in mid-pricers, but there's just so much value, I think, to be had in Selwood that the pros do outweigh the cons in this case.
All right, final question for the week. And this one's not really a question, but I just want to get your thoughts, Dunny. Port players off the bye. Mark and I last week sort of had a skim through the Gold Coast and Port players that we thought were worthy trade-in targets. And just want to get your thoughts while you're on, mate, in terms of who the top Port options might be. How would you rank maybe the top three, Dunny, and your likelihood in terms of bringing in those players?
Well, I hate to say it, but I don't actually have plans to bring any of those guys in.
Any?
I'm sure that'll get me taken off as being a card-carrying Port Adelaide member. I think Ollie Wines has had he had a few bad weeks there, which I think has dragged his average down a bit. He had three fairly quiet games recently where he went 56, 70 and 86. Yeah, other than that, he's been fantastic this season. So I think I'd certainly be looking to take the punt on him. At his price of 468,900 at the moment and with a break-even of 80, I think he'd be probably the value pick out of those guys. Brad Ebert I've always liked, averaging 108 at the moment. His scoring's been pretty consistent throughout the year. He's only had three under 100 and two of them were in the high 90s. So those two guys would definitely be at the start of the list for me, and I'd be sort of looking for them to play that M8, M9 role. I like Jasper in the back line, although his 84 average isn't really all that enticing. He's only had one game over 100 so far this year. I think he's more of a DT player than what he is a super coach player. And Paddy Ryder, the other one, once again, you're not going to put him into your ruck slot, that's for sure. He's going to be a forward if anywhere. I don't mind that selection. He had a down game last week against Geelong, but I think those really slick, fast-paced games don't suit him quite as much. So I think I'd be a bit wary in bringing him in. So for me, Wines and Ebert would be the two power players that I'd really be looking at if I wanted to bring one in.
It does sound like that mirrors a little bit what we were looking at last week, Dunny, where, yeah. I mean, we're kind of trying to find somebody that we can mount a case for, but it is a little bit of a struggle. All right. Thanks for that analysis, Dunny. Hopefully that helps contextualize our views from last week for our listeners. As we do each week, let's end with a captain's corner. It's a little bit of an easy equation this week because we have all these bye players for the next 3 weeks, and you can use them as a captaincy loophole sort of right up till the last game. You get to basically pick whatever vice captain and captain you like. For myself this week, I think, and for most people, I think it's going to be pretty hard to go against Dangerfield versus his old club in Adelaide. A lot on the line there, and then the last 2 weeks he scored fairly massive points, so be pretty hard to move off him. And then in terms of a backup captaincy option, I think Adam Treloar has had a couple of hot weeks after a rest, and they're playing Fremantle, which could have sort of some points up for grabs there. Mark, what are your thoughts?
You just went first so that you could claim those two players, I reckon.
I mean, during the buys, we're going to converge on a few more similar options, you would assume, with less picks to choose from.
And I'm really hoping to just lock away another good danger score.
Yeah.
I agree. I'll probably be doing the same. I'll be probably going danger into either Treloar or maybe Taylor Adams. But, if you wanted to have another crack on Thursday night, you could always look at Tommy Mitchell potentially against Port Adelaide.
Are you on the Mitchell train too, Dunny?
I do have Tom Mitchell.
Yes, toot toot.
Very happy having him in my side. But I think the likelihood of Paddy putting up another huge score is probably there. It's going to be another tough game against Adelaide, but it certainly wasn't an easy game against Port.
All right, I think that's enough for this week's show. Thank you very much to our listeners. And don't forget, patreon.com/supercoachcoach if you're looking to support us. I think that's it for this week's show then. Anything to leave our listeners with? Final words, Dunny?
No, look, good luck everyone throughout the buys. Hope your rankings can all skyrocket, and hopefully next time you guys get me on, the curse has been lifted.
I like that, Dunny. Mark?
Got any advice of what I should do with my time, seeing as there's only going to be 4 games between Saturday and Sunday?
Yeah, I know. I don't know why they're doing a Thursday night game on Jesus Christ, on a six-game round. But
one game on a Sunday at 4 o'clock is certainly not my ideal Sunday afternoon. I'd like to have a couple of games to watch.
At least for the long weekend, the Queen's Birthday long weekend, we are up to 7 games. So that's not awful, I guess. Still Thursday, which is a little bit shitty. Anyway, that's it for this week's show.
Thanks.
See you guys.